And welcome to this installment of Mercenary Musings Radio, a new audio service presenting views and insight from the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how you doing?
I'm doing well today, Rob.
Okay, good stuff. Last time out, you told our listeners, Mickey, that we were going to focus on rare earth elements, which, in fact, are not very rare at all, are they?
No, they were called rare when they were discovered in the early 1800s to about 1900s, because they're generally rare as minerals. But, for instance, cerium is more abundant than copper is in the periodic table in the Earth's crust. They comprise 15 elements plus yttrium, so 16 in all, so-called lanthanide series of elements. And if you remember your high school chemistry, they're kind of isolated in a separate row along the near the bottom of the periodic table. They are generally separated into the light rare earths, which is 6 elements, and the heavy rare earths, which are 9 elements.
Okay, well, if rare earths are in fact not very rare, why is there such a concerted effort underway in North America right now, Mickey, to find a new mineable deposit of rare earths? Also, explain for listeners who may not be familiar, in what items do we find rare earths today? Where are they used?
Okay, we'll start on this, and I'll tell you right now that the Chinese control world production. We'll go into that a little bit in more detail in a minute here. In the 1900s, they were generally developed through placer sands, and they were used in gas heating elements and things such as common as Coleman lantern mantles. In 1952, there's a huge deposit that came in production in called Mountain Pass in Southeast California. It is mainly a light rare earth element deposit. At one time, it supplied 40% of world production. The company Molycorp, which most people in the mining sector probably heard of, developed the processing, extraction, and the uses for these things, which were mainly in cracking petroleum and catalytic converters for cars. And the big step in technology was red phosphors for your color TV, and that really led to the color TV boom in the early to mid-60s. By about 1984, the Chinese started major production. A place called Bayanobo, where the rare earths are produced as a byproduct of iron mining, and then some laterite clay deposits in South China. Basically, what's happened in the late 80s to early 90s, the Chinese cut prices. Mountain Pass could not compete. Mountain Pass also had a tailing spill. If you've ever driven I-15 from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, you have gone right through the middle of this the mine and its infrastructure. Because the Chinese have taken control of world production, there has been a bit of a panic in the West because these things have new high-tech applications. Chinese control something on the order of 85% to 90% of world production. I know most people say 95% to 97%. But if you look at those figures, it doesn't include Russian production, which we know supplies about 10%, and it does not include the processing from Molycorp, because that's a private company.
And as every year goes by, Mickey, I believe the number of items that need rare earth elements continues to grow. I mean, right now the big buzz out there, of course, is hybrid vehicles, electric-powered vehicles and whatnot, and rare earths are a key component of that.
That's correct, and the major demand will be driven by hybrid cars. But there's also things that consumer electronics. Every thing you own that you communicate with right now, from your cell phone to your hardwire phone to your iPod, all these things use not large quantities, but quantities of rare earths that cannot be replaced by other metals.
Okay, so China right now, you're saying, controls about 85% or so of the world market. Is enough of this stuff getting through right now, or are there fears that perhaps sometime down the road in the not-too-distant future, China may slow the flow of rare earth elements out of that country because it only has to look into its own backyard to see a swelling demand, I'm sure, internally because of the number of new middle-class people in China.
Well, you're very astute in that remark, Rob, because that's exactly what's happened. In about mid-2009, the Chinese announced an increased policy of protectionism and nationalism, if you will. They've been doing this for quite a while, but they basically announced that they're going to cut back on exports, and they have instituted policies to force processing and manufacture and end uses into China, whereas before they basically control world production and extraction. Their policies have changed. They also have a brain drain from other places in the world and essentially have a world monopoly right now. So that is of major concern to the West, specifically Japanese and Korean hybrid car makers, the U.S., because we do have a policy of increasing green tech, so-called clean energy policies, and also military applications, smart bombs and laser-guided missiles and things such as this. Rare earths are essential, so the U.S. government, Washington, is instituting a strategic mineral policy for rare earths.
Okay, that plays into my next question a little bit. I know there are plenty of companies out there right now, Mickey, exploring for trying to find a mineable deposit for rare earths in North America, but why do we find ourselves in this situation today, and why has it taken so long for efforts in this area to really ramp up?
Well, I think it's just short-sightedness on the part, especially of the U.S. government. At one time, we had strategic mineral stockpiles of rare earths, and over the course of the last 20 or 30 years, and many more areas other than rare earths, strategic mineral stockpiles have been either used down or sold off. So short-sightedness, it's a bit curious that we have this increased demand, 10% year over year, and projected shortages, yet rare earth prices have not really increased during this time. So it's as opposed to some bubbles that we've looked at and are aware of, this is not a commodity price bubble, but it's certainly an equity bubble at this stage.
But finding a mineable deposit of rare earths is really, it's a major step, obviously, but that's just one step, because you also need processing plants, do you not, on-site or very close to a mine?
Well, not necessarily on-site or close to, but where the U.S. and the Western world, including Japan and Korea, are really falling down is, let me back up and say, there are plenty of deposits in the world. There's plenty of deposits in North America that are advanced that will meet our supply needs, but the real problem here is value is added in the processing and manufacturing stage, and that is where this brain drain that has gone to China over the last 15 or 20 years is very apparent at this point.
I mentioned earlier, Mickey, that there are plenty of companies out there right now exploring for mineable deposits of rare earths in North America. Just how many companies are, in fact, on the hunt for these rare earth deposits right now?
Well, I have a couple of lists that I've looked at lately and added a couple of companies to them, but I'm looking at 75 venture and Toronto Exchange listed juniors. Within that, let me back up and say there are some major players. There's a couple of Australian companies, one of which will be the first in production outside of China for a long time. Interestingly enough, they had a 51% deal with the Chinese during the market crash, and that was scuttled when the Australians government pulled out in a financing led by Goldman Sachs. And then, of course, you have the one U.S. private company, which is Molycorp, which, interestingly enough, one of its major shareholders is Goldman Sachs. Of these 75 juniors, I went through the list earlier today, I consider 13 of those to have legitimate exploration plays There's a couple of those with downstream manufacturing processing capabilities, but of the 13, I only see 3 with development decisions in sight right now. Rob, this is a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to blow bubbles when you're always given bubble gum. You notice I mentioned Goldman Sachs in as a player with 2 of the major players in the business. U.S. government certainly involved with the green energy, clean tech initiatives that going on.
You mentioned government, and you're not a fan of big government by any stretch of the imagination, but has the situation concerning rare earths in the West reached the point where perhaps further government involvement is needed to really spur on the development of this industry? Maybe it's not direct government involvement, maybe indirect government involvement through special incentives, tax breaks, that kind of thing. Is that something you see taking place?
Well, I think most definitely the U.S. government is highly involved in this. If you go to Molycorp's website, you'll see that they talk about research and development financing and subsidies from the U.S. government. So certainly this is a bubble being supported by the U.S. government. Of course, Goldman Sachs is a great American bubble machine, and the neat thing about this, Rob, right now is I consider if this were a 9-inning baseball game in this bubble, we're about the bottom of the second, top of the third. I think it's got a long ways to go.
And that sounds like a lot of opportunities for investors then to get in on the ground floor of this then.
I think so. And once again, there will be specific companies that will succeed in this space. And it's a matter of investors doing their own due diligence and research and reading a lot and deciding which companies are worthy of investment. Certainly some are overpriced right now.
Okay, we'll end it there. Mickey, next time out, what do you want to focus on?
We're going to talk about gold. Gold is what drives the junior resource sector, always has and always will, Rob.
Okay, and it's going to be quite interesting to see just where that price of gold is sitting at next time we talk, because it has been quite the ride of late, hasn't it?
It has, and I expect additional volatility with what's going on in with the European Union, and of course a lot of it depends on the strength of the dollar.
Okay, thanks very much, Mickey.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Mickey Fult, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.